I try to get to the studio as late as I possibly can. One, because I have difficulty falling asleep. So I try to get as many Z's as I can in the morning. Like, the idea of morning workout people is beyond me, right? Like, I could never. But part of it is that I really need to conserve my energy when I get in here, because I work with young people, which I actually enjoy. Like, I feel like it keeps me sharp. I like trying to offer some mentorship that I never personally received. You know, be the change you want to see in the world. But then I show up here this morning and I get a lot of, fam, I didn't know a lot about O.J. Simpson, fam. Do you know he wrote a book, fam? And then did you see this guy, fam? Oh, I know that guy. That guy they're referring to, by the way, is Norm Macdonald. And I'm just sitting there realizing how old I am, getting just mad watching these guys talk and needing so badly to just share it with. Like, I almost went to 680 News and was like, hey, we should do a breaking story. This just in, two guys basically trying to have a podcast in the morning, ruining my day, telling me what they thought about O.J. Simpson. Anyways, big day today. Leafs, Auston Matthews is at 68 goals. But to me, the bigger story yesterday, not the bigger story, but the more meaningful story to me was Max Domi, who gets a couple of assists, both beautiful, both just gorgeous assists. One where he just knocks a puck down on a midair and makes a play over to Matthews that is just gorgeous. Gorgeous stuff. Great hand-eye coordination. I said this last night on Leafs Talk, but the guy gets it. He really understands what it is to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. He knows what the fans want. He was a fan. He cared deeply. He was there during a very meaningful period for the fan base, for the Toronto Maple Leafs, which was like in the heart of the Battle of Ontario. He was in his formative years as a young hockey fan. And yeah, probably didn't hurt that his dad was a part of it. And I can't get over how he's making a lot of Leaf fans feel right now, which is like, oh, right. This is what they've wanted. This is what they've needed. That this is actually providing something different than anything that the core four guys have provided. And this is including, you know, a local kid in Mitch Marner and a local guy that came home with Tavares. This is different. This is the type of passion and care that you were always hoping to see from a player. And yeah, you know, last night some people are debating as to whether or not Domi should have punched that stupid rookie who went after Auston Matthews when the guy is clearly just trying to stay healthy before the postseason. This is a team that often has been criticized for not sticking up for their star players. I'll never forget even a few years ago when Matthews got buried in a Detroit Red Wings game and everyone just stood around him as he was like trying to get up from behind the net. And here's Max Domi. The second it happens, guy drops the gloves and he starts just filling them in. Jumps them. Great. Jump them. It's hockey. It's not the ballet. It was incredible to watch. And I really am fascinated by a part of this with the fan base too, which is, I think it's just like the tree living experience, seeing him have some success signing some free agents and not seeing it just be a disaster after Kyle Dubas left is a little bit of a freedom knowing, hey, you know what? Mitch Marner is a good player, but he didn't make Auston Matthews. Auston Matthews doesn't need Mitch Marner. And I'm sorry, but that's a little bit freeing. And you can really feel it in the fan perception right now. Anyways, it's time for the birthday girl, Jackie Redmond, my friend and yours. WWE, TNT, the Jackie Redmond show. What's up, Jackie? How are we doing? Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you. And thank you for not saying how old I'm turning, because I listened to you rant about how old you feel this morning coming in and talking to the kids, fam.
Yeah.
And really
you're
old.
Just one of them. You're also 27.
Off the top.
No, you're just like them, 27. You want to also ask questions about O.J. Simpson to the old people? Like, who is he? That's, you know what, though? That's a good way to fake it now. That's a good way to stay young, is just ask questions. Just not know anything about anything and only know it through.
Yeah, just play dumb. Dumb for any pop culture references that predate, like, 2005.
So the thing that I'm learning more of from Gen Z is that they don't know anything from television. They know everything from memes. And so, like, they didn't know who Jon Stewart was. And you know how Armin referenced Jon Stewart to me? He said, oh, the popcorn gif guy. And I went, what? That's how he knew him. And so, yeah, there's no, like, looking back and knowing anything else. It's just, you know, whatever you can absorb within 5 seconds in your brain from an internet meme, that's all you can do. But, yes, happy birthday, happy birthday. I actually have some birthday thoughts for you later before we close this thing off.
Okay.
But, okay, so I got to start with the hot stuff, which is the Leaf stuff. And you are a big-time Darcy Tucker fan, okay? And I'm not trying to say Max Domi is Darcy Tucker, but Darcy Tucker wasn't the Leafs' most talented player. He was the player that resonated the most with the fan base during that period of time. And I still think Matthews is the least most popular player, but are you feeling the same feelings about Max Domi that a lot of this fan base is?
1,000%. I think that, you know, it's so crazy that we're talking so much about Domi, and Domi's, you know, in a lot of ways dominating headlines, for lack of a better phrase, right now, because you're like, what year is it? Why are we talking so much about this Domi? But I think that we connect to Domi because he exudes the passion that Leafs fans have for the team. Like, I have a group chat with my family, and every time the Leafs play, you know, it's going off. And my sister has a line for anytime the Leafs start a game flat, which, you know, in the last handful of years has been quite often, or they're just kind of laying an egg or not really playing to their potential. And it's always in all caps, where's the passion? Like, where is it? And I think the reason that we are so tied to Domi in this moment is because he has found a way to bring that passion to life on the ice in a meaningful way, not just dropping the gloves because he feels like he has to, or doing things to try to live up to the expectations or the persona that he's expected to have, but because he actually feels it. Mm-hmm. And he actually knows what it means to be a Toronto Maple Leaf and to appeal to the fan base. And he's doing it in an effective way, not a way that costs the team defensively, at least right now. And I think that's why people are so, they feel so connected to Domi in this moment as he's been playing with Austin Matthews. And he found a spot. Like, he hasn't had a spot all season. We've wondered if this Domi thing could work. Mm-hmm. And now Sheldon Keefe has found a way for it to work. And it's worked in a way that appeals to people that have been rooting for this team for so long.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
And he's not overwhelmed by it, right?
No.
Like, I think Mitch Marner
embraces it.
I think Mitch Marner understands what it means to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. I think he understands what it means to be a Maple Leafs fan favorite or to appeal to the fan base. I think he totally gets it. But I also think that Mitch Marner, at a lot of times in his tenure, especially in high stakes, high pressure moments, is overwhelmed by it. I don't think Max Domi is intimidated by what it means to perform or be an effective member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think he actually embraces that pressure. I don't think he's a player that will be overcome by it, especially in the postseason. And that is a massive W for Toronto.
No, it's huge. It feels like Max Domi is the inside man on the Leafs, right? He's the fan that everybody has put in there, like, hey, go in there and teach them about passion and caring and giving a crap. And yeah, I think that what we, I think about this a lot, right? Like, what is authenticity and why people resonate the way that they do? And I just feel like Max Domi, the way that he plays, and the joy that he brings to the ice, the passion in which he plays with, is authentic. It's real. And it works for people. And so now, yeah, this offseason, there will be time for contract talk. Now it's going to be playoff talk. But I really
get rid of the contract talk. I'm already over it.
Well, I really do hope that they can find a way to make this happen year over year over year. Because, yeah, to me, he's a great fit with Austin Matthews, and I wouldn't mind seeing this for the rest of Austin Matthews' tenure as a Toronto Maple Leaf, especially on a fair deal for both sides. Okay, so by the way, do you have thoughts on Matthew 68 playing? If he's sitting at 68 or 69 heading into the final season, do you care? What's your thought with rest versus chasing 70?
Okay, so I do have thoughts on that, but I did want to add one more thing to the Domi conversation, because I agree with you in terms of, like, seeing him with Austin Matthews. I think we have to go with it because it works. Not only does it work for Domi and for Matthews, but I think that it has a real positive effect on the rest of the lineup right now. But also, if Domi is around next year and this team can tweak their roster a little bit and adjust some of the holes in their roster, then that becomes magnified as well. And just to further illustrate the point I was making before about show me not only understanding what it means to be a Maple Leaf and to appeal to the fan base in an effective way, it's by doing it without costing the Leafs anything. Like, remember when David Clarkson became a Maple Leaf?
Of course.
He totally knew what it meant to be a fan favorite and how he could fit that role, but he didn't understand in a lot of ways how to navigate that line without crossing it. You know what I mean? And so I think that Domi gets it in from that standpoint as well. Okay, Austin Matthews, he has to get 70. Don't rest him. He has to get 70. It's like the MVP conversation is a totally separate thing, and I am curious your thoughts on it. Like, if he hits 70, should he be MVP? Because there are people that think it's an automatic. I think that's up for debate. But this is something so special and so rare that I think if Austin Matthews were to sit a couple of games to avoid injury or not do something right before the playoffs, it could be something where 20 years from now, he looks back and is like, man, I could have been one of 9 players to ever score 70 goals in a season. And I didn't do it because I was worried about, I didn't play one game because I was worried about getting hurt for a playoff that in the end might not even matter. He might not win anything. Mm-hmm. So I would want to go for it. I hope that he wants to go for it. I hope the Leafs let him go for it. And I hope he does it in the next game. Like, just score 2 next game, and then it's done, and it's not a conversation. But it's hard not to think about, I think it was Patrice Bergeron last year that played that game. Yeah, it was. Bergeron played that game in Montreal right before the postseason because he knew it was probably going to be his last chance to play there, and he got hurt right before the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. I'd be curious if he regrets that decision now. My guess would be, in hindsight, no.
I would also say no, because he was probably thinking that's a freak accident. It could have happened any time, because that's the way that you need to think about this stuff. Ultimately, the scenario, the quote unquote doomsday scenario we're talking about here, is Austin Matthews playing another 18 minutes. Like,
yeah,
that's it. 18 minutes. Should something freakish happen, then I'll worry about it then. But to me, I am a kind of a believer in this. In this scenario, is they say that if you fret about stuff like this, you actually live it twice, because you're worried about it now, and then if it does happen, you worry about it anyways, right? So I don't want to live in that reality twice. I would rather just enjoy the pursuit of the 70 goals, realize that this is something that I, you know, have not seen in my adult life. Like, I don't remember 93 when this last happened. I'm sorry. Like, I'm not that old, so I don't have a memory of that. So I want to see it. I think that it's important, and I want goal scorers to care about stats. I do. I like goal scorers caring about statistics. I think that's a big,
especially
important part of the
historic one.
Yeah, exactly. And so for Austin Matthews, I really hope he hits 70. I don't know. I don't think it will materially change the MVP conversation, which is kind of whatever. I really think that it is an odd MVP season, where you could tell me that it's any of 5 guys, and I would go, yeah, okay, that's fair. 4 specifically, but yeah, 5, and I go, yep, you can make the case. But for Matthews, I think this season is special, and to cap it off with 70 and to have that positive momentum rolling into the postseason, and the feelings that this group would have about that, not just for Matthews, but for the rest of them realizing that, like, they contributed, to me, that upside is more than the risk of getting hurt over the course of 18 minutes.
You know what's crazy, too, is a lot of people are talking about, okay, he's probably going to hit 70. He's got 68 and only 2, I think it's 2 empty netters in those 68.
Yeah.
51 of his goals have come at even strength. Mm-hmm. 51.
Yeah, he's
that
not a power play merchant.
That is wild to me. Yeah, like, he's not just, like, racking it up on the man advantage. He is doing this at 5-on-5, and it's just so crazy to think how dominant he has been at doing the hardest thing to do in the NHL. Like, Nathan MacKinnon, I think, is second in even strength goals. It might be 40 or 41. I can't remember. But it's wild to me that he has that many at even strength.
Yeah, MacKinnon has 41 even strength goals. So, yeah, 10 behind Matthews, and he's number 2. And I do think that, you know, the power play still matters a lot, and the Leafs have been pretty dry there again now heading into the postseason, to the point where I'm nervous about it again, and I'd like to see it click for the last couple of regular season games. I wish it felt more like a weapon. But, yeah, it should be stated that, like, guys like Kucherov, who Kucherov going to have, he's got 98 assists. He's probably going to hit 100, 141 points, leads the league. Definitely someone who has a good heart case. But he's got 52 power play points. Auston Matthews has 28. So when we're doing all the five-on-five stuff, and we always do that expected goals for, and we use everything five-on-five, 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 I think it should at least just be noted that while a skill set and while a valuable one, and it doesn't take away from any of those points, that, yeah, Matthews is, you know, sitting at almost half of what this guy has on the power play.
And I'll say this, too, about the Leafs power play going into the postseason. Obviously, you want to have a solid power play and be able to make your opponents pay in the postseason. But I do think it is something that we, not just with the Leafs, I just think in general when we cover hockey, kind of overemphasize in the playoffs because, as we know, there's a lot fewer penalties called in the postseason. I think the majority of series are usually played at 5-on-5, and the penalty kill is way more important. So while you prefer to have a solid power play that you know can convert when given the opportunity, it's not the end-all, be-all if your power play is only mediocre in the postseason. Like, it's not something that has me, like, you know, worried going into the playoffs, like, oh, no, if the Leafs don't get their power play going, they're going to be in trouble. I think they have other issues that are a little bit more concerning that come into play for more parts of the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But I'm very worried about it. I think they need it. I think they've got to be dominant on the power play and, yeah, make teams afraid of losing that battle to them. I think the penalty kill has been much better. It's been normalized, which is great because it was a disaster before. But, yeah, I need to see more from the power play. It's got to feel threatening again. And for the last stretch here, it still hasn't felt that way. And part of it was injuries. Now Marner's back, and it still doesn't feel overly threatening. And maybe some of it is that they're hoping to get Matthews these goals on the power play, and so there's some hesitation by guys. But,
yeah,
I was thinking about it last night where I'm like, okay, would you have shot there? It's kind of why I like Tavares there is he doesn't care. He's just going, he's hunting for himself. He's got his own goal scorer mentality. It's like he gets an opportunity, he rips it. But, yeah, need the power play to get on track. Okay, so any other Leaf thought that you have before the playoffs start? Anything that you really care about or you want to get off your chest?
Well, we just talked about a lot of it, the questions that I had for you. So I guess I'll just ask you this, since it's the last time I'm going to talk to you before the playoffs. And I know you and I can be long-winded, so I'll say, in brief, what would be the thing that gives you the most confidence about the Maple Leafs going into the postseason and the thing that causes you the most concern?
It's funny because I just tried to be like, don't think about how bad things could happen. And yet I do that all the time. So hypocritical because you said the most concerning and I went, I have multiple.
Self-aware hypocrite. Yeah, so those are acceptable hypocrites.
Sure. I'm most excited by the fact that I think that there are multiple guys who can get them a goal in a big spot this year. Ryan O'Reilly was huge for this team last postseason, even though I think that he was kind of hurt. Looked like a guy who was slowing down, but man, it just felt so big having another centerman that you could rely upon, and they don't have that this season. But what they do have is players who I think could score a big goal in a big moment in abundance, that they can spread out the scoring, that it's not just going to feel like you're waiting for Matthews to come over the boards or else nothing's going to happen, especially if you're trailing in a hockey game. So the secondary scoring, but also the demeanor of some of the guys that are down there, where I really feel like they're not going to be afraid of being down in a series or being down in a hockey game. Like, I think Bertuzzi is going to play the way that Bertuzzi does, regardless of the situation. Domi, same thing. I think that you're going to get this out of McMahon. I like what I'm seeing from Knies recently. So, like, the abundance of forwards that I think can come up with a big one outside of the core four, that is what I feel most confident about. What I'm most scared or what I'm nervous about is I would have said the blue line because I still feel like they're trying to figure out the pairings and it's not been discussed a lot. Like, it's been the buried story and all of the success of Matthews and the Marner-Matthews pairing stuff and special teams and goaltending. So to me, you know, the blue line still feels like they're really missing a guy. And they don't know exactly who they're going to play. But ultimately, the thing that makes me the most nervous is what happened last night, which is Samsonov just breaks your back and you go, oh, right, even though you've played great and you're an awesome story, I don't think that there's a real, like, belief that it can't just go topsy-turvy and then all of a sudden you're throwing the kid in net who also hasn't looked the same since the injury. So yeah, goaltending always makes me the most nervous. And I hate saying that because normally I find goaltending to be the easy excuse for this fan base and that it often gets too much ire and bears too much of the blame. But yeah, it's there. It's there for me.
And sometimes too, it's as much about your goaltender as it is who you have to go up against in a 7-game series and what their track record is or what their consistency levels have been during the season or just over the course of their career, right? So I think it's all about injuries and matchups once you get into an actual playoff series. So I get that, though. I don't disagree with you. I worry about the blue line only because I just feel like in covering multiple cup finals at this point, it's like I've never seen a team come into the final and not be playing through or dealing with major injuries to their back end. So while we might be able to figure out the pairings and it might be something that we can have some confidence in the early going, it's like, but what about once there's a major injury that takes a top four guy out? Or what if someone has to play with a broken ankle, like I think it was Ekblad did in the final last year? Like, how do we navigate that? Do the Leafs have enough depth and enough skill on the back end to get through the inevitable injuries that will happen if they plan to go four rounds deep? I don't know that they do.
See,
and I think other teams in the postseason do.
See, that's the part about them that I actually feel a little bit more confident in, is that they don't have top tier guys, but they've got a lot of guys. Like yesterday, the panel was talking about him, and Elliot and Kipper both had TJ Brody outside of the starting six. And I went, yeah, I don't think TJ Brody has had a very good season. It's been rough for a lot of it. He has really looked his age. But if he and Giordano are your 7 and 8, that's pretty nice, right? Like, if I don't like Connor Timmins from a hockey standpoint, just don't see it. Don't trust him. Don't want to see him in a postseason. But if he's your number 9 defenseman, I can live in that world, right? I can live in that reality.
And also, I was just going to say, like, I'm a big believer in, like, these intangible, weird, quirky, like, psychological 100%. Motivating factors.
Yes.
And I think for Brody, it's like Brody not being in the lineup, for example, to start a series, but coming in for game 5, 6, 7 because someone gets hurt or someone's really not playing well, like, that's a guy that's A, not going to be overwhelmed by it, has playoff experience, but also is going to be so motivated to be like, F you, I deserve to be in this lineup, and I'm going to show you in this game when it matters the most. So I believe in those, like, psychological tendencies, and I think Brody is a player that would be in I don't know if it's a good spot, that's probably not the right way to phrase it, but I do think that I would be like, okay, this guy's going to come back with a vengeance to try to prove himself in this spot. Whether he does it, I don't know, but I do think that that could be kind of like a blessing in disguise, the fact that he's had this season where it's like, oh, has Brody, like, lost a step? Does he have it anymore? And a chance for him to kind of shine when it matters most.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Okay, so before I move into the week that you just had, or birthday questions I have for you, is rank the top 5 Hart guys then. If you have to rank them, because you're national, okay? Even though you are Leafs. No, you don't want to do it?
I'll do it.
Want me to go
I'll
first?
I'll do it. I just can't wait for my mentions to blow up.
No, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. You can't make it. Nobody's going to be happy. We've already said that. I think I mentioned it last night or maybe today already, but somebody tweeted this, out of all the years, this should be the year where they just split it up into 5 and give everybody a chunk. And I'm like, yeah, it's true. But if you had to do it, how would you do it?
Okay. As it stands today, I would put Nathan MacKinnon first, because even just watch, like, everyone likes to just look at point totals as, like, the best illustration of, like, what a player is, which I don't think is the accurate way to do it. I think it's part of it, obviously. And Nathan MacKinnon has that. But it's just watching him play. Like, this guy is an absolute menace. He is so dominant in these games that it makes, to me, like, I feel like a fan again when I watch Nathan MacKinnon play. So I just feel like he takes over games. He's taken his entire presence on the ice to a whole new level, and he's got the stats to back it up. Plus, he's from Nova Scotia, so I'll go Nathan MacKinnon, number one.
Okay, yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with that one, because one is that if you look at, like, the across-the-board take for Nathan MacKinnon, it's he's the best balance of all the things. He's the best balance of the goals. He's the best balance of the points. He's the best balance of the, like, 200-foot player, right, that he's having this season. Best balance of the record, the team record, the next guy on his team in terms of point getting, right? Like, like him and Rantanen. I feel like MacKinnon is the strongest case on balance out of everybody. Like, he's been the guy for the entire season, so I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, he's an absolute horse this year. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. I now it's going to get hard. Already I'm like, ooh, do I want to do this? Do I want to do that? I think, and this is my bias coming out probably, I think if Austin Matthews gets 70, which I do believe he will, I would probably put him at number two because I just think it's so special and it's so historic and it's something I've never seen, or it's happened in my lifetime, but like you, I'm not that old. I don't remember the last 70 goal score. I didn't watch 82 games of hockey that year. Mm-hmm. So I think it's super special. I think it illustrates just how incredible Austin Matthews is. And I think even at times, being as biased as I am towards the Maple Leafs, like, I don't know that I've fully appreciated just how special of a player that he is that we get to watch every night. And I think this has really driven it home for me. Mm-hmm. Plus, I just think that, especially in the first half of the season, I just think that a lot of those goals were really important for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think Matthews single-handedly won them a lot of games with some of those multi-goal efforts that maybe they didn't deserve to win. So when I look at it that way, I think that makes it even more valuable. I think you have to have Connor McDavid in there. He's having another incredible season, could hit 100 assists. I think on February 1st, he was like 20 points behind the scoring race lead or something like that. He brought it to within one. He's missed a couple games now, so I don't know what the gap is at this point. I know it's gotten bigger again, but I just think it's unreal to think that his team was atrocious to start the year. He turned it on, was putting up over 2 points per game for like 25 games. You can't ignore it. And he's the best player in the world, so you can never go wrong having him in there. I think the final two spots I would have to go, I don't know what order. It doesn't really matter if you're not first, you're last, so it doesn't really matter. Okay, yeah. But I think that Pastrnak has been unbelievable. He is far and away been the best player for the Boston Bruins, a team that isn't as elite as they have been in years past, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So he has been unreal. He has, I think it's like a 40-point gap or something, or 30-something point gap on his next closest teammate. I could be messing that up. But I think he has been unbelievable. And Kucherov, just always underhyped, but I think he has to be in there.
I was
going to
say the points leader, five. I was like, okay, so I'm close with you. As of today, I think that the Matthews 50 thing does change things for me too. The McDavid 100 assists and Kucherov 100 assists, I'm not trying to diminish those accomplishments. I think that they're unbelievable. I think they're incredible. I think fewer guys have done them than 50. Than 70 goals. I could also be wrong. You and I are doing a lot of could be wrong stats.
No, you're right. No, you're right. It is. It's fewer. I think it's only three guys.
Still,
or four guys.
Still
like
don't
that.
Care. Still, it's assists. You can get one being secondary assist. Also, McDavid did get a coach fired this year, which I think should matter. And he does only have 31 goals. And so I have him lower out of all the guys. I have it right now. If Matthews scores 70, I would have him three behind Kucherov. I just think Kucherov with 141 points, it's Braden Point on his team that's next in points with 88. He's also going to end up with 43 goals. There's a lot of power play merchant stuff, but I thought Tampa was dead this year. And I just think about what they would have been if they would even be here, probably because everybody in these sucks. Maybe that diminishes the point, but I'd have him two, Matthews three. Matthews scores 70. Maybe I get in the same bias camp as you where I'm like, oh, you know, they did finish higher than Tampa in the standing, so maybe I give him that slight edge. And then I have, McDavid four, Sid five. And, Sid is
You got Sid in there.
Yeah, I just think, like, if you look at what he's doing to drag his team in the postseason now and just, the numbers that he has. And, again, I do it emotionally, and also part of it is taking credit away from Dubas, where I'm just like, you needed the guy that was an MVP caliber player just to squeak you into the final spot, Kyle. That's the only reason that it worked. But, that's my top five as of today. I got McDavid four, which I know would get me, killed, but it's just like how
and
I feel.
Also, I just think it's the fact that there's so much debate about who the MVP could be, and it's not between two guys. It's between, I think, there's five, six, maybe even seven that you could make, like, a legitimate, like, awesome case for, just shows you how great this season has been.
Yeah, that Panarin's not even mentioned with 47 and 70. It's like he's not even in the mix. And it's like, yep, okay. Great year for Stars. Great year for superstar players. Like, people, I think, will look back on this year as being a very special one for hockey. Like, I hope so anyways. Like, 10, 15 years from now, when we are super old and when Armin and Mike are really mad because, I don't know, they're... there's some, although they have no culture, so they won't be upset because everything is no permanent, so they won't remember anyways. But someday, if they ever get mad about, like, Dua Lipa not being known, then they will be like, yeah, they'll remember this year as being special. Okay, before you go, you want to do your week or birthday stuff?
It's up to you. I don't care. It's my birthday. We'll do whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that was the point. That was it. It's like, it's your birthday. So first of all, happy birthday to you. I can kind of tie these two things together. One is your week is insane. You did the WrestleMania thing, which was awesome. It was really cool to see on that, you know, like that stage doing that kind of work. I was like, man, Jackie, you know, come a long way since... misplaced, right? Or since drafted. So I thought that was really neat. That was cool.
I'm not just a blooper girl anymore.
No, you're not just bloopers. And yeah, you're there. You're doing all this cool stuff, and you know, you're flying back and forth to NHL Network Studios and NHL on TNT, and making sure that, you know, you still get your work done. And now here you are doing a show at 9 a.m. on your birthday. So it's, you really have to respect the hustle. Like, it's just, it's undeniable. It's absolutely undeniable. But birthdays in your 30s, like, what is, you know, what is your level of celebration now? Because for me, I actually dread my birthday because it is a sign of getting older. I don't want to be I don't even want people to know it's my birthday. Like, I hate that. But you and I are very different. Are you a birthday week person still? Like, what is your...
Oh, God, no.
Okay, so
I've never been a birthday week person. Even when I was young and I was more into my birthday, I have never been even a multiple day celebration person. Those people drive me insane. Like, I'm sorry. You get the day. You don't get the week.
Yeah.
I've met people who have birthday months and I'm like, I can't
You haven't met people. Like, you've met other women. There's never been a guy who's done birthday month. Never.
Nah, that's up for debate. But yes, it is more of a female tendency, I will say. But yes, first of all, you're asking about birthdays in my 30s. I'm obviously 29 today, I don't know what you're talking about.
My bad, fam.
Yeah, you know what, fam? I love that you're just burying the term fam as you talk about old people versus young people. Is that term out? Is that still cool?
I think it's way out. That's why it's fun to do.
We need to do new
slang.
Segment.
Yeah, we could definitely use some new slang injections.
Okay. So anyways, to answer your question, I like being acknowledged on my birthday. Who doesn't like people being like, happy birthday, love you so much, blah, blah, blah. Everyone likes attention. So I do enjoy that part of my birthday. But even now, like, I'm not a big celebratory person. And maybe it's because of my work schedule and because of my job. But like, even today, right, my husband made us dinner reservations and was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, honestly, I would much rather just like have a nice home cooked meal, hang out, chill, watch some Netflix, maybe go in the hot tub and just be low key. And maybe it's because of the rest of my life is so hectic all the time. Yeah. But for me, like, I don't need a cake. I don't need any of that. I just want to chill and I'll be happy. So.
Listen, you know, this is a clear sign that you've turned 29 because, you know, here, this is... This is getting, too real about this. I'm like, so I'm with you about, I love attention. I obviously do because I'm here, but birthday attention makes me feel queasy in some way. I don't like unearned attention. Like,
you know what I hate?
Yeah.
You know what I actually hate?
Yeah.
When people sing me happy birthday,
it
makes me want to crawl out of my body and just die.
Yeah, but that's because the only people who do that are your parents. So it's like anything your parents do makes you want to, you know, crawl out of your body because it's painful, like in public. So no, it's that's linked to that, I think, more so than anything. But no, I hate birthday attention. I really do. When someone knows what my birthday is, I feel like they are blackmailing me. Like, they can be like, happy birthday. I'm like, shut up. Don't let anybody know. Please, I'll do whatever you want. I'll give you the money. I'll wire it wherever you need. Just keep this on the download. Don't let me get this. Real attention for you know, accomplishments, that I like. That I like. Birthday attention? No, hate it. Hate it so, so, so very much. Like, the only other example I have for this is tragedy attention, which I also hate. Like, if something really bad happens to you and people are like, oh, constantly want to do that, I hate it. Oh, God, I hate it so much. It's the worst, it's the worst, it's the worst. So that and birthdays, like, they're tied 1A, 1B in terms of the only attention that I do not want to receive. But I like your plan, and I think that you should go forward with that plan and do exactly what you want. You've earned it. You've only got one more birthday left in your 20s, so soak it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Jackie, congrats on what was a great week. I know it had to feel very, very cool. Oh, wait, before you go, what was your favorite part? What was your favorite part about doing all this? The whole WrestleMania thing, flying back and forth, being a true celeb. What was your favorite moment? What was your, like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is real moment? For me, when I saw it on your socials, it was you standing on the WrestleMania ramp and having the solo access as they were showing it, and I was like, this is pretty cool. That's a pretty cool shot.
Yeah, I think, you know, I had so many firsts this year at WrestleMania, but I think, you know, and there's obviously, like, big moments, like being on the floor when, you know, Undertaker's music hits, which I, you know, like, I didn't know was happening. I don't actually like to know what's happening. I like to just go in blind and not know how things are going to play out because I want to treat it like I'm a fan and be surprised. So, like, that was a huge moment, but I think for me personally, like, just coming out of the weekend and looking at everything, I was like, man, I hosted the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony this year. Like, I could never host it again, but for the rest of my life, I could be like, I did that. Like, I actually hosted a Hall of Fame ceremony, you know, and where Paul Heyman's going in, and I'm standing in the middle of a wrestling ring, literally introducing The Rock to come out. Like, never in my life did I think I would find myself in a position where I'm on a stage introducing Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But that happened for me this weekend. And so, like, 10-year-old, I'm a 12-year-old me who loved The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin and the Hardy Boys and was very much a fan of the Attitude Era in wrestling. To me, that's pretty wild that I just did that. So, and no matter what happens, like, I could be fired from all my jobs tomorrow and never work again, but I'd be like, that's pretty cool that I got to do that.
It's very cool. That is very, very cool. Jackie, happy birthday. Yeah. I hope everybody wishes you a happy birthday because that is what you said you wanted. So everybody that's listening to this show, at Jackie Rimmon. And yeah, go enjoy the rest of your day. See you, Jackie.
Thanks, JD. Appreciate it. Go Leafs.
Yeah, see ya. Okay, we got to run. UFC 300 this weekend. Loaded. The top, listen, I didn't love the main event. I don't think any of you loved the main event as much as we had hoped. I think these guys have done now a good job promoting it, but the actual depth of the card is the story of this thing. And then, yeah, like, to the point where a guy that just had the bantamweight win streak is, who just had suffered his first loss, one loss, to Sean O'Malley, champion, now is on the prelims, like, is on the undercard for this event, is how deep it is. You can buy, by the way, UFC 300 at www.sportsnetplus.ca to purchase Pereira versus Hill. It starts at 10 o'clock on Saturday. It's available to order and stream on Sportsnet Plus. But no subscriptions required. And, you know, you can catch the prelims for free on Sportsnet 360 or stream it on Sportsnet Plus with your standard subscription. Anyways, Aljamain Sterling, one of the guys on the undercard. Next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Really pleased to be joined by former UFC bantamweight champion, guy who's fighting Calvin Kattar this weekend, jumping up a weight class too. It's Aljamain Sterling. Hey, man, how are we doing?
Very good. It's one day closer to weighing time.
Yeah, I was going to say, this has got to be the worst time, right? You're like, okay, media car wash, still trying to maintain weight, like, got to have all the pressure. It just, like, I know when I'm waiting for anything for a day or two, you're now in just, like, nothing changes mode now, right? Like, nothing is going to get done from here on until the fight.
Yeah, I'm pretty much just dialed into that and just focus on getting everything in order and staying out some media stuff and just getting ready, as mentally ready prepared as we can be for this weekend.
I was going to say, so basically this entire week is just trying to make sure that you maintain the mentals, right? Like, is there anything that you do? You just try to basically zone out, watch TV, video games, so that you don't let any kind of outside noise in?
I play a lot of chess, a lot of
chess.
Online chess.
Okay, yeah, that's an interesting one. Okay.
I'm like newly addicted to it.
Addicted to chess.
Finally broke 1300 in the 5-minute games, and it's been a fun challenge mentally and just learning. I never realized how fun of a game this actually was.
Yeah, no, that's an intimidating game to try to jump into. So the fact that you're starting to see some success and that's working for you is awesome. So yeah, man, you've been fighting in the promotion for 10 years now, and the Century Mark promos, like UFC 300, that again, you can catch the prelims at 8 on Sportsnet 360 or stream it on Sportsnet Plus with your standard premium subscription. And you can buy this, by the way, www.sportsnetplus.ca/UFC. Whenever it's like a UFC 100, 200, 300, the Century Mark cards, they mean so much more to the fans. And we saw this again this year, right? Where everyone wanted to know what the card was going to look like. Everyone was hanging on for what Dana was going to say, every single reveal that Dana was going to give. Does it have the same significance to you? Like, when you got got a chance to be a part of this card, did it excite you in a way that the others didn't?
I think for me, it's more about the eyeballs and how many people are going to be locked into watching this. Even if you're not a fight fan, it's just such a big mystique of an event. So I think a lot of people around the world are going to be tuned in, and to be on a card like this where I'm going to be able to get a lot of exposure gives me a big opportunity to shine as bright as I can. And definitely super happy and privileged to be having this opportunity.
Yeah, you know what is cool about, though, from the fan standpoint, is it kind of is a marker of where we're at with the UFC. And, you know, I think about being in a bar for UFC 100 and just the hype that it was getting at the time, being actually, you know, now that I think about it, it was not a great look. I was in a bar for both UFC 100 and 200. But it always feels like almost like a state of the union for the UFC, right? Like there is something, I think, historical and memorable about these cards. And so you're right to think about the added eyeballs. But I also think that it's cool that you're involved in, one of the Century Mark cards. I think that, probably one day when you're looking back on your career, you'll think back at it and be like, and hopefully a win for you. So it's your featherweight debut. But yes, why now?
I think the weight cut was just killing me inside for the past few years. And it's just been time. You know, I wanted to do it with a win. I wanted to at least take my time to make the weight again for my last fight. Unfortunately, I didn't really get that opportunity. And partially it's my fault for accepting. But with that said, I knew that was the last time I was going to be able to do that again to my body. So I wanted to make sure I did it the right way. And now it's just like my body's just like, yeah, dude, we were going to do this on a high note, but now we're going to have to do this in a different way, which is all good. Sometimes you got to pivot in life. And here we are. I'm excited about this opportunity to go up to 45 and show these guys, man, I've been struggling with that weight cut for years. And I think it kind of showed in my performances, the way I felt internally. People always thought I looked great, but I always felt differently inside. Good poker face, but I think 45 is going to be able to show a lot more of what I can do in the ring, in the training room, and I'll be able to bring that to the octagon with me.
You think that's an age thing, though? Because, I'm pretty sure that you have the longest consecutive win streak at bantamweight, right? Don't you still hold that?
Yeah, I think I'm tied actually with Marab. He's going to break the record when he fights O'Malley for the belt. But with that said, that was pretty much it. The age is definitely a factor. I got a little bit more dense. My weight started to go up a little bit more noticeably after each fight. And it turns out I got a good enough frame for 145.
Yeah. You're moving up to 145. Did any part of this, like, I don't know what your relationship is with Marab. I saw that you guys cut that promo video. You did the skit, which was really funny. Are you guys tight? Was there any part of this that was, hey, I don't want to be in there with Marab?
No. I mean, we were never offered a fight with each other. I mean, it's not like we would have fought each other anyway, especially not for the money that we would have been offered to fight each other for. We were never, neither one of us were ever offered a fight against each other. So it's kind of weird when people keep saying we were holding up the division or whatnot, but we're really good friends. We're actually neighbors here in Vegas. He's literally like four houses down from me. So, we have a pretty good friendship and a pretty good training relationship as well.
Yeah. The skit was great. Like, I think O'Malley retweeted and said that he chuckled watching it because it was really good. I got to say, I really respected it because I feel like the way that fight promotion has gone a lot of times is guys talking as much trash as they can and as outlandish as they can. Like, there's been, especially since McGregor, kind of a shift in terms of the ways to get noticed. And I just respected the creativity of this as a way to kind of, maintain public interest, to keep his name in the mix for this. I am curious, like, what do you think about the state of trying to promote fights right now? Because it does feel like there's a tremendous amount of pressure on you fighters to basically be saying the most out-of-pocket thing that you can.
Yeah, definitely. You see a lot of guys having to be a bit ridiculous in order to get fights or to get known or tattoo their face and color their hair. I don't know. You gotta figure out what works for you and what you're most comfortable with doing in terms of coming outside yourself to entertain, so to speak, and to promote. But you gotta figure out a way to uniquely make the fans give a shit about you. And it's nice to see Merab doing stuff his way. It's cool because we've done some stuff back in the day together, and now he's kind of taking it to the next level with his promotional stuff, and I think it's really, really good, and people are taking notice of how clever it is. So I'm glad people are starting to realize his humor and actually that he's a pretty funny dude outside of the ring and even in the ring. I think people are starting to see his persona a little bit more. But I think in all, fighters do need to kind of take notes of the shift and everything that's happening. Yeah, talking trash is cool, but you got to be good at it. Sometimes an accent definitely helps. But yeah, I think it just depends on the person. You never know what the fans are going to gravitate to. They kind of pick and choose who they want, and hopefully it's you.
Yeah, to be honest, I really do think that it's all about authenticity. Like, if people feel like you are that guy and you talk that way and you walk that walk and it is funny, that they'll buy into it. And usually I find that when it's inauthentic and a guy is clearly forcing it, I'm not going to name names, but there's one guy, especially right now in the UFC. I'm like, it's got to stop. Yeah. It's just hurt. It's painful to watch. It kind of ends up backfiring. And I think that it pulls people in the opposite direction. Okay. So to the actual nuts and bolts of this thing, again, you're going up to featherweight from bantamweight again. Thank you. But, was there anything outside of the weight cut that was like materially different for you when it came to training for this fight?
I mean, the only thing that was different was the mindset, kind of being comfortable with the 45ers that I was now constantly sparring with. You know, before I would spar mostly bantamweights, and I was a pretty big boy. I mean, the last few years, I've been walking around 170 to 174 pounds. Sometimes, even after these weight cuts to 35, I would be up to 180-plus pounds, which was just insane, how my body would just go into a shock. So to now make this adjustment, I feel a lot healthier. My energy levels are a lot better. I'm in a better mood to talk to people. Even on fight week, I mean, this still sucks. So Thursday is obviously the worst day because you're that close, but and you're the lightest, right? So, but even this Thursday is way better than Thursday for 135, getting down to that. So definitely a big difference in that mindset shift and being comfortable knowing that I'm big enough, I'm strong enough, quick enough, and good enough to go with these guys at 145.
Yeah, you know, you're big enough certainly to fight at this weight class. You say, do you normally walk around at 180?
No, I walk around 170 to 174.
Oh, okay. So yeah, but still, that's a pretty big weight difference. But yeah, so with Cater though, this is a guy like you're stepping in there who does a good job at like fighting at distance and fighting with range. And you know, when you looked at this matchup, did you feel like, oh, damn, okay, I'm jumping, jumping right into the deep end on this new division by taking on someone that, body weight wise or body size wise, you weren't going to see in your weight class?
I mean, he was the highest ranked opponent that they offered me, you know? So for me, I've always talked about like some of the champions who duck the number one contenders and they fight down in the rankings because it's just, you know, they want the easier win, and they think that gets them respect to beat someone you're expected and supposed to beat. I've always prided myself on fighting the next best guy, And I think that's the difference in my mentality than a lot of these other fighters. You give me the best guy on the roster, I'm going to go after it. So with that said, that was what was offered. That's what was available. And I said it makes sense for where he's at in his career, where I'm at in my career, coming up a weight class, everything I've done in my division. I don't think I deserve the number one guy, right? But if it was available, I would have taken it. So the next best guy was Calvin Kattar. And I respect him a lot. You know, he's got a really good game. But it is what it is. This is business, and I got to go out there and do my job and do what I do best.
Listen, I know you got to run, and you got a lot of obligations today. But, yeah, do you feel as though, you know, you are a former champ, and even though that this isn't your natural division or the division that you came up in, that should you win this fight, that you should go a lot higher in the rankings, like that you should be given the opportunity for a title fight?
I do, but it also depends on how I finish the fight and how I win the fight, I should say. If I win it in style points, I don't see how I could be denied. I'm the new face, the new block, the new kid on the block, so just got to see how everything shakes out on Saturday night.
Hey, Aljo, thanks again for the time, and good luck on Saturday.
Thank you, bro.
Take care. Again, you can watch UFC 300 Pereira versus Hill. Starts at 10 p.m. Eastern Saturday and is available to order and stream on Sportsnet Plus at an additional cost, but no subscription is required. Visit sportsnetplus.ca/UFC to purchase. Also, again, you can watch the prelims at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 360 or stream it on Sportsnet Plus with your standard or premium subscription. Starting to get the playoff matchup set. I haven't decided yet whether or not I like the fact that we're getting Clippers and Mavs in the first round. And it does feel sticky about it. Overly familiar. Anyway, our next guest was just here, enjoying this fine city. Zach Harper, NBA writer for The Athletic and co-host of Count the Dings and numerous pods. What's up, brother? How we doing? How did you enjoy our fine city?
Oh, my goodness. It was only my second time there. Yeah. The first time was just for... less than a day during the finals in 2019. Yeah. What an incredible city. I mean, you guys know this, but oh my goodness, just what an incredible city. So welcoming, so fun. Crowds for our show were phenomenal, yeah. And the food's amazing. Like, just a great place.
Yeah. We're really good to tourists, though, too. That's one of our hallmarks, is that we find out you're not from here, and then we really put it on. Yeah. We put it on for company. Like, there's, like, famous Southern comfort, Southern hospitality. Not Southern comfort, this is a drink. Southern hospitality. I think we kind of rival it, but then to each other, we're, like, really rude. Like, people, like, Canadians are so nice, and then amongst each other, we're like, not really. But to you guys, oh, boy, do we ever put it on. We take out the fancy chinaware when you guys are present.
And I appreciate that because as someone that lives in LA, we don't care who's here whenever. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Everyone needs to.
We are the capital of please like us, though. Like, that is the thing, is we are the kings and queens of just, oh my God, please like us, please like us, please like us, please like us. That's why you know what it's like being an NBA writer whenever you try to be like, hey, you know, the Raptors, I got an opinion about them that isn't, they're the greatest of all time, and you're going to feel it. You're going to feel it a lot because people here desperately want to be like, California, that's your culture there. It's just, we're too cool to care. We know who we are. It's like, if you like it or not, we don't care. We'll be at the beach.
Yeah, we'll be at the beach. We're too good looking for even the people that live here, right? Yeah. Like, so don't come in here. Like, this is like, how dare you even grace us with your presence? Like, that's not what we're looking for.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you get to have some of the food. I'm glad that you had sold out shows. Like, I saw some images from some of them. Looked like it was a great time. You guys had a really great cast of people that was here. So I'm glad you enjoyed Toronto, even though you came here during one of the, worst seasons for basketball in the city ever. Like, this is as low as it gets. I can't say I've done a Raptors segment on my show for weeks. Right. I there's nothing to say. I'm like, even when they try to put someone like, quickly had 30 points. I'm like, I don't care what they lost by 45 points. This is a franchise with a really embarrassing past, right? As an expansion franchise that wasn't even allowed to have the first overall pick for a couple of years.
And yet this is a low of a low of a low. So anyway, I'm going to move on to other NBA teams. I actually want to talk a little bit about your fandom because I thought about you watching the Nuggets game the other night, because here the T-Wolves have an opportunity to be like, hey, we might be a tough out, right? The Mavs did it, what, a couple weeks prior where Kyrie hits that shot and you see the two-man game closing it and you're like, oh, wow, there's a path here for Dallas. And we're having this big discussion about, hey, maybe they're the team to knock them off. And I went, hey, T-Wolves have an opportunity to do this too. And all this talk about having the bigs, and maybe Towns makes a difference, but you got the depoy down there, and then all of a sudden, you know, Jokic goes off for 41 against them. Just like, yeah, easy buckets. How did that game make you feel? Did it change your expectations as a T-Wolves fan? Like, what is the thought in terms of where they stack up in the actual pursuit of a championship this season?
Well, I mean, I think for the Timberwolves, like I said this when they traded for Rudy Gobert, right? I said, if they, during this stretch, like let's say he's there for 4 years, and maybe he'll be there longer. Let's say he's there for 4 years. If for two of those years they win 50 games and make it to the second round, that's the greatest stretch in Timberwolves history. Like, it just is. Like, that's how bad the history is.
By the way, sorry for complaining about what's been going on with the Raptors so far this year. That made me feel bad when you just said that. I was like, I'm sorry. Yeah, I won't complain again.
No, but that's the crazy thing, right? Like, that, like, people, you know, say certain things about, like, moves they make. I'm like, you know, the best free agent they've ever signed is Jeff Teague. Like, that's the best free agent. Now, they've traded for guys, right? Like, but, like, it's just not a rich history of basketball success, and it's, you know, I think for them, like, yeah, they're maybe going to get the one or two seed, depending on what happens this weekend. That would matter. That would be good. But for the most part, it's just, are they going to get out of the first round? Right? Like, that's the thing. Before you start talking about championship, like, it's a really good team. That defense is legit. Anthony Edwards is a superstar. But they play horrible basketball in tight games. They haven't figured that out. You know, they've been missing Towns for a while. They still have to integrate him back into the mix, which isn't just going to be this seamless thing. You can't start talking about Todd. Like, I think with them and with the Thunder, yeah, great story. It's an incredible season so far. Mm-hmm. We have no idea if they're going to do anything in the postseason.
Yeah. So first of all, I think Toronto can outdo you on the free agency front, because the biggest name they ever signed was Haydu, but the best they've ever signed free agent-wise was Bismack Biyombo. Like, genuinely, that's a fact. You can go through Toronto's free agent history, and that is by far.
They got the trades, right?
They got it. Yeah, nobody's coming here. That's my favorite story ever free agency-wise, was when LaMarcus Aldridge was a free agent. Masai was basically, like, sleeping on a hotel floor just to try to get, like, a 10-second meeting with Aldridge, and he looked at him and was like, hey, man, that's cool that you're here, but obviously I'm not going. He's like, yeah. Right. Just give you a pitch. I felt like I learned a lot about the T-Wolves' chances this year when it was that Towns chasing 70 night, where he was chasing the stats, and all of his teammates were kind of watching. They were playing the Hornets, and I went, this is an ugly one. Like, when you're trying to reintegrate that guy, and that's the reason why you're supposed to be a little bit more hopeful, I have my doubts. When you're reintegrating the guy that has been on record saying that what he thinks that his team accomplished last season was more impactful than the team that won the championship, I get nervous. I get nervous about that personality re-entering the room. But yeah, isn't this kind of the ultimate thing, though, is if you're a T-Wolves fan, my thought is you kind of want them to not do well enough that they say run it back. You kind of want to have a little bit of success, maybe win a round, but look flawed, because isn't the path forward to move Towns?
It depends on who's the owner.
Yeah, okay, well, that was next.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you get these reports that, oh, by the way, they're going to cut. But, and I'm like, do these guys have money? Do A-Rod and Mark Lurie have money?
No.
Like, I know they have more money than I do. But they don't have the money to run.
That's for sure.
Right? Yeah. And so, it's like, all right, so the plan is you have to cut down to this certain amount of money for the payroll. Well, that means you trade downs, right? Like, that's just what it is. If they're going to take over, if these reports are true. And so I don't think they need, if it's just about basketball, I don't think they need to trade Towns. Like, you can design a way where he is not clogging up the paint, where he only posts up when, you know, Rudy's not in the game, whatever. And he is legitimately a great shooter. It drives me crazy. People are like, oh, he's one of the best
shooting big men in the league. I'm like, he's just one of the best shooters in the league.
Period.
Like, he's that good. Like, I get it. Like, you don't want him anywhere near a microphone because he says stupid things like like the accomplishment thing. But, like, it can work. It's about having more shooters on the perimeter to where you can still space it for Ant. And Ant's still figuring out being a superstar. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you have to trade him. But it does seem like whether that's this summer or next summer, it does seem like the likely path at some point.
Okay, so the ownership thing. The weird thing, too, is though, is it feels like Towns, part of the success of getting Edwards be the alpha, is that it should properly slot Towns. And
right.
There were moments where I felt that way, where I went, oh, man, I mean, maybe this is it. It's just I just can't get behind Towns. I just feel like, again, when it comes to a winning moment, you're not going to get it. And that's what scares me. And I will say this too, is, you know, as a, you know, person that's invested in the Raptors, there's a few players where they would come here and I would go, oh my God, this is not what I want at all. Like, people were wanting Ayton last summer, right? They're like, well, you're buying him cheap. And I was like, I swear to God, if they trade for DeAndre Ayton, I won't watch a game. Like, I'm done. Like, I'll pick a new team. I don't care. I'll just become a complete foil and never root for the Raptors. And Towns is one of those guys where it'd be like, hey, we traded for Carlisle's house. I'd be like, oh, okay, I guess so. But the ownership thing, it's weird to me because you're like, all right, maybe these guys don't have any money, which that's one door, is the guys mm-hmm. who don't have enough money and they might start doing Sarver moves, which is terrifying, right? Like, you don't want them trading Towns because of money. You want them trading Towns because they feel as though there's a better way to optimize the actual roster. But then door number two is an owner who is now seeing success, but is like, has a really strong case to be the worst owner in professional basketball now, like, whose track record is
now, sure.
Yeah. Like, horrific. Yeah. You go through his moves and you're like, this can't all be one person. It's it very much is. Like, which door would you prefer? The broke boys or the horrible owner that wanted out and has the worst ideas?
I mean, I definitely wouldn't want the broke boys.
Yeah.
Like, that's for sure. Like, I don't think you, okay. Like, yes, like you said it perfectly. Like, you want to trade Towns because of basketball reasons, not because of money. And the, you know, the new CBA definitely complicates a lot of that anyway, mm-hmm. with how rosters are allowed to be constructed once you pass a certain luxury tax apron. But no, like, you want an ownership that spends money. And Glenn Taylor also, by the way, has not historically done that. Like, mm-hmm. he's done it a couple of times, but it's always been the wrong moves. Like, hey, we're going to give Troy Hudson $36 million over 6 years, back when the salary cap was like 60.
Nice.
Right? Like, it's moves like that, mm-hmm. where you're like, I don't think that's basketball. That doesn't seem like a good idea. But they just also, they can't get rid of Glenn Taylor. Like, he to his credit, he came in and bought the team in 94 and stopped them from going to New Orleans. Yep. They were about to lose the franchise because those owners didn't have any money.
Yep.
And then it's just incompetence after incompetence, nepotism that ruins the structure of the franchise. And he tried to start selling them, like, maybe like a decade ago. He was getting into that and then decided, like, oh, no, I'll just buy up more minority shares. Mm. So then he just bought up more of the team, and he's not a good owner. The Timberwolves are arguably the worst franchise since they joined the league. I mean, it's that bad, and arguably the worst franchise since he joined the league. Mm-hmm. But again, he at least has money right now. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's, you know what? That's right. That's sadly right.
And that's the life of the Timberwolves.
Yeah, right, I was going to say that even in your good year, you're like, oh, God. Yeah, finally they get up to the top of the West and there's some optimism around them, and you get Anthony Edwards, and then all of a sudden there's like an ownership battle between like two truly horrific options. There's no – and the team looks just good enough to be really competitive but not good enough to genuinely win. Okay, so – I think, you know, I was reading your mailbag, and you're with me that the only team that can beat Denver is the Dallas Mavericks, potentially. But is the first round to you, now that these two teams are locked in, the reason why I kind of felt not happy with it is I kind of think both these teams are the only ones that I want to see play Denver. And now they're playing each other in the first round. And so, to me, it's kind of – I don't like when a team gets the cakewalk treatment, and that's not really necessarily what Denver's going to get, but – yeah. Are these the two teams to you, or is there somebody else?
I mean, I'm interested in what OKC can do. I just think they're too young and, yeah. and it's their first time, right? But in terms of, like, stylistically, like, no, they don't have the big men to do it.
Yeah.
But there's something weird about the way that they play. It's just very different to anything that Denver is going to face. And so I'm open to it. Plus, they shoot the ball so well. Like, they shoot, like, 40% from three as a team, and they take a lot of attempts. So I'm open to that idea. But, no, it's these two. I mean, maybe the Warriors, if everything breaks right for them, maybe the Warriors can do it in the first round. Like, they're finally healthy, and they look really good when they're healthy, and the lineups are dominant when they're healthy. But, I mean, that also might just be talking resume rather than what's in front of us.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that the Clippers and Mavs are going to face off in the first. I love this because it's the pressure. It's the pressure you need going into the next series against Denver, because Denver's going to have the one seed.
Mm-hmm.
And so both these teams, more so for the Clippers, they need to beat the Mavericks to get everything on the right page and everything on board to be in the mindset they need. They need to get out of that Clippers mindset, right? They need Kawhi healthy. They need all these things. But if they can't beat the Mavericks in the first round, they have no chance of beating Denver.
Mm-hmm.
If they played the Pelicans and beat the Pelicans, like, that's not – the Pelicans are good, but that's not the test they need. They need this, because I do think Dallas is the most well-rounded team. Over the last 18 games, which is a little over a month, Dallas has the best defense in basketball, which if you told me they were going to have the best defense for any stretch a month ago, I would have said you're crazy.
I don't even really believe you saying it now.
I know it doesn't. I didn't. As the words came out of my mouth, I thought this can't be right.
Yeah,
this still doesn't sound right. But they have the two of the best clutch players in the league. They have one of the best offenses in the league. They have three quality big men that they can throw at Jokic at this point. They play defense. Even if they play defense 80% of this, it's dangerous enough. Like, I love this Dallas team right now.
Yeah, no, I do too. It's funny because every time I would watch Dallas the last couple of seasons, it was, and even stretches this year. And these guys know, I did a segment, like, during this season. I think it was with me and Bobby Marks, about why they always just look so good on paper and why this feels like it's fit and why Luka's scoring, is the way that he scores. And yet you look at their record, right? And it's like, oh, they're four games above 500. And they come to Toronto and they just get shelled by a team that sucks. Or they're down to the buzzer with a team that, hasn't beat anybody else that's of consequence. I'd actually like to see those two teams' records over the last, like, five seasons. Or, like, Luka's been here. I don't think that they've done particularly well. And it just felt like you could never, ever put it together. Or the games that they would be putting it together, I would never see. And now this has been a real stretch. This has been a meaningful stretch. And so, yes, I'm very much, very, very, very much buying the Dallas stock. And I hope that they beat the Clippers because, I don't think that... I don't think that the Clips have a chance to actually do it. I think that they just represent the sort of maybe could do it under the perfect scenario thing. The thing you said there, though, that's interesting is the stuff about Golden State. Because, you look in the play-in right now, and it looks like it could be Phoenix, LA, and the Warriors. And the Masters is on my TV, and I feel as though we're in this phase right now that with the NBA stars, with those three teams particularly, that golf was just in after Tiger won in 2019. And then it was, we're back to selling the game around Tiger Woods. We're back to selling fans. Oh, Tiger, is he going to be here? And is he going to win the Masters? Like, no. That was a rare occurrence. That was a one-off. His competitive window in terms of winning majors is now closed. And yet it took us a couple of years to sort of figure that out. And now you watch the Masters this week. There was no Tiger Woods coverage in terms of his narrative, right? And what his ceiling could be. It was, he wants to go out there and make the cut. And now you have it with these guys. Make the cut, right? Just make the playoffs. That's what you're kind of hoping to do. Have we now entered this where we're all going to start to accept after this postseason that the Durant, the LeBron, the Steph eras are, the championship-wise, it's closed?
No, because think about what we do out here in Hollywood, right? Yeah. We just remake everything.
Yeah, okay.
That was 35 years ago. Let's stick with that. Let's try it. So it's just going to be, we can, with Tinkerbell, like you clap and she comes back to life. That's all we're doing with LeBron and the Warriors and the Lakers and everything. Like, it's just, if we clap loud enough, they'll be good again. And they're good teams. They're just not championship teams, right? Like, and
you know, I've been saying this all season where people are like, well, yeah, but the Lakers made the conference finals last year. I'm like, yeah, and they got swept. And I don't think you can say you made a conference finals if you got swept. I just don't. I think you can say you showed up, but that you didn't make it. And that, like, that team's not good enough. You can't count on Anthony Davis, but, you know, he's not that guy. They keep trying to make him that guy. He's not that guy. He's really good. He's not that guy. The Warriors, I mean, if Draymond could stop punching people all the time and hitting people and getting thrown out, then that's a dangerous team. But they need Klay to look great and Wig to look great and, you know, Draymond to be on the court. And they need, you know, Trayce Jackson-Davis is a major part, and Brandon Podziemski is a major part. And, all right, now you're dealing with two rookies. Like, there's just so many what-ifs. And usually once when we play the what-if game with a team, when we get to about three or four, I start saying, like, okay, this isn't happening. Right. And like, it's just now it's too many twists and turns, too many qualifiers. And so, like, I do think the Warriors are dangerous because Steph's dangerous and they played really well when they're healthy, but they haven't built championship tendencies during this time. And we know what it looks like when they play championship basketball.
Yeah. The Warriors definitely still feel like they have more life, but like, when you talk about the clapping stuff, the NBA at some point, you have to pivot. Right? Like, are you just going to wait until they're all just actually out of the league before you start embracing the other stars this way? And I know that they're in a difficult position, right? Because the most interesting guys in the game play for Minnesota and Milwaukee and Oklahoma City, right? And Denver. Right. Like, it's, they're like, this is, and you go, well, this is what you wanted, right? This is, you put in this new luxury tax. Like, this is what you wanted. Everybody has an equal chance and everybody has an equal team. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how they, like, actually start to pivot this. I almost feel as though they need a Luka run here, like a real meaningful one, because that's the only path forward to the new guy that everyone will actually care about and want to watch.
Well, don't worry. They have the other star in Texas who's in, San Antonio.
Yeah.
Wendy's in San Antonio. Right.
Which, like, it's seeing the jersey gives people PTSD of being like, no, please. It's like, no.
Sorry. Yeah. But by the way, no one can touch him in a couple of years. He's going to be out of this world.
Yes, 100%. But yeah, do you think that they're going to – so just they're not going to embrace this pivot from a marketing standpoint until they're gone?
I think they will when they have to, yeah. You know, like, I don't think they don't necessarily have to yet. But, I think it's – you know, Shea is unbelievable. Ant is unbelievable. Part of the problem is Jokic doesn't want any of the attention. Right? You could make him very marketable. Like, yeah, Luka's the guy. Mm-hmm. They made the conference finals a couple of years ago, and it was really fun. You had that series with Phoenix. I think if you get a, you know, even a second round matchup, if you get Luka versus Jokic in the second round, especially with their friendship/rivalry, that's very, very marketable.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the Jokic thing is real in terms of he doesn't want it. I am surprised, though, that he's still not more popular. Like, I even saw – so you wrote it. You have him as your MVP. But right now, he's only minus 900 on the books to win, which is – like, that's a heavy favorite, right? That's a very heavy favorite. But it should be done, in my opinion. This should be very, very obvious. There shouldn't be, like, a backdoor scenario for someone to win. And, like, those odds actually do imply that it wouldn't be – insane if that's what ended up happening here, that if he didn't win the MVP. And I understand that the winning three and the company that puts him in makes people uncomfortable, but why do you feel as though even after last year's run, like that last year's championship, it felt like such a coordination of Jokic? He's had all of these big moments, like again with against the Timberwolves where he shuts it down. They've proven unequivocally again that he's the most dangerous guy in basketball. His team is going to finish first in the West, and everyone's going to have to go through Denver again. Like, why do you think that there's still this reluctance surrounding Jokic, even from, I think, some members of media that seem to kind of want to keep him? And I'm not talking about, like, the Gilbert Arenas ones, obviously. I'm talking about, like, real people who cover the game and don't just do it through shooting out an agenda. Why is still the lack of Jokic full embrace?
Because he's a big, fat, white guy. In the
That's what I thought.
It still looks weird to people, right? Like, people are like, oh, he's a finesse. Like, I don't think people realize how physical he is. He throws more elbows and pushes guys. Like, he's one of the most physical guys in the league, but people think he's this finesse player, and it's just not true, you know? And I just think that there is an aesthetic there, not the way he plays, but just him physically. And then that Denver team, like, there's nothing sexy about it. They're just really good.
You know, like they're just really, really good. They're really sound in everything they do. And if you're a basketball nerd, it's beautiful basketball. If you're a casual fan, you're like, all right, yeah, that's cool. Whatever. What's next?
Mm. It's weird because, yeah, I guess when I watch him, he's my favorite guy to watch. It's like him and Ant and Wemby. Like, those are the three players that basically when I have, if I'm doing my, like, league pass rankings and it's, like, they're on TV, then I want to watch them. And then, you know, like, that's it. It's conclusive, though. It's Denver is always the one because they're also competitive. The physicality thing is so true. One of my favorite Jokic things is how many times when he's running down the floor, he just nails the big man he's playing just to basically set the tone. It's like a hockey player. He just goes, yeah, I'm going to hit you now. And the look of these guys every time is the exact same. They don't want it. They're not interested in hitting them.
Crazy strong.
Yes.
He is crazy strong. Like, people do, they just see this, like, kind of flabby guy. And yes, compared to everyone else on the court, it's it. But up close, like, this is just a big monster strong dude. Like, he just is. And you're right. Like, that's the funny thing. When he runs up the court, he does it for two reasons. One, it gets them off balance, and all of a sudden you've got to now go catch him, right? And he can't beat you in a foot race. But once you're off balance, now he can get a step on you. And two, he knows that none of them want this physicality.
No. He loves hitting them. He loves just absolutely bodying guys. I love seeing it every single time because I'm like, man, this guy is a competitor. And ultimately, too, that's it. Is okay, so maybe he doesn't want to market himself. Maybe he doesn't want to put himself out there. But when it comes to, I think, an era across professional sports where you want to feel like you're getting bang for your buck, where you want to not tune in and feel like a guy is checked out on a game. Like, have you ever watched a Nuggets game where you're like, oh, Jokic doesn't have it tonight, like from a effort standpoint? Like, oh, he's like, he plays all the games, and every single time he plays, he treats it as though it's a meaningful basketball game. Like, it doesn't matter. He's always, always, always competing. And so I guess I'm surprised that part doesn't resonate more in the load management era and in what I call the no care era in the rest of sports.
Yeah. I also just think, like, I mean, this is a whole other conversation, but I think part of the problem is one of your main league broadcast partners is not very good at covering the NBA. You know, you can guess who that is.
Yeah.
And then number two, like, I don't think the NBA is very good at marketing themselves right now. I genuinely don't. I think they're very confused on how to market the league in this new era of media and of platforms and everything. And you're just seeing this. I mean, like you said earlier, it's the same old, like, well, remember LeBron? Hey, he's still really good.
Yeah. Legacy of Steph and LeBron.
Yeah.
Like, that's it every single time. Legacies of these old guys, not the new guys. And then the pushback to the new guys when they're starting to do stuff special of immediately being like, well, it's different and it's not as good. And it's like, okay, so we can't have Jokic have as many MVPs as Moses Malone? Like, fine. All right.
Which is so stupid.
Yeah.
So it's so dumb. But, and by the way, Rudy Gobert is about to tie the record for most Defensive Player of the Year awards. Mm-hmm. And people have a problem with that. I'm like, look, he's earned it. You know, he's earned it. Like, I wouldn't want him defending in the postseason, but in the regular season, he's a monster. And it doesn't matter anyway, because Wembanyama is going to get the next 10. So,
By the way, I'm fine with Rudy getting DPOY because he's on the way better team. So that matters to me. Like, Wembanyama, to me, if I needed one stop, he would still be the guy that I would choose right now. And there's some crazy stats of, like, how he's already got more 8-block games than Gobert has in his entire career. Like, he's insane. Like, I got to go see the game when he was here, and it was the one where he put together the triple-double with points, rebounds, and blocks. I just went, oh, it's going to ruin it. It made me feel so bad about having Scottie Barnes, where they're like, oh, you have a guy, you have Scottie Barnes. And then he just, like, eviscerated Barnes. Like, Barnes could not do a thing, couldn't get to the basket, and it was a blowout for the Spurs because Wembanyama was in his bag that night. I do feel a little bit like this DPOY is like, hey, Rudy, here's your last one, because the rest of them.
Wemby even said, he's like, you know, he can have this one.
Yeah,
he's
enjoy
not going to get me after this. Like, this kid's a killer. He's so good. And I'm with you. I don't think he's the DPOY. Like, I genuinely don't. Like, he has amazing stats. The stats are ridiculous. I also have watched pretty much every Spurs game this year, and there are a lot of times he doesn't rotate over. He's slow getting up the floor. You know, like he's still learning effort. He's still learning consistency with that stuff. And so while he's been spectacular, he hasn't been as consistent, and I'll take the consistency. But he's, I mean, no shot is safe with him on the floor. It's really incredible how he is changing everything. And if he stays healthy, he's going to be one of the 10 greatest players ever. It's just, I don't know how you can deny it.
No, there's no question. It's completely undeniable. You're watching him do this stuff in his rookie season, surrounded by nothing. And you're like, holy crap, this is a real problem. The question I think is going to be interesting is, will guys want to play with him? Like, is he going to be an actual point of gravity or not? And I can't wait to see how it plays out. But, okay, so he is such an obvious rookie of the year choice, right? And I think that it's Rudy Gobert for DPOY and whatever. I don't know how much we've ever really cared about DPOY unless it's like a guard is in the mix and then we start getting in that conversation. You've got an MVP that seems to be rubbing some people the wrong way because it's instead of a coronation, which it should be, and the proper marketing, which it should be, it still feels like, really? Three MVPs? That's the main thing. I don't care about sixth man this year. I'm sorry. Malik Monk is cool, free agent stuff. That's fine. Is it just the byproduct of the year and who's up for these awards? Or do you think that we actually, from a discourse standpoint, care about awards less?
I think we care about certain awards. Like, most improved and sixth man been something that care. Yeah. No. I think defensive player of the year, I do think kind of because it's Rudy. Uh-huh. You know, people don't like Rudy. And so I think that's caring less. If it was Wembanyama was about to win it, I think a lot of people will be a lot more excited about the award.
Yep.
So I think that'll happen next year. But yeah, I also just think we've also gotten into this mode, even with guys who have won championships. It's like, yeah, but do it in the playoffs.
Mm.
Right? Like, let's see what you do in the playoffs. Because that's where we are with, like, the Thunder and the Wolves and all these teams. Like, it's like, yeah, but do it in the playoffs. And so we've just become this society, this basketball society that just focuses on these 16 games coming up for somebody or 16 wins coming up for somebody rather than everything else.
I think it's more than just basketball, though. Like, you're seeing this, like, so here we have, like, this is Toronto. We love the Maple Leafs here. You may have heard we like hockey in Canada. They might have told you that. And he's going to score 70 goals, which hasn't been done since the 1990s. And some people are excited, and most people are watching the games for that reason, but the overarching thing is, well, do it in the playoffs. And granted, they haven't, but it does feel like this is the way it's going in all sports. Like, we talked about Jokic with all this. He did it in the playoffs, and yet still there's no excitement about him doing it in a regular season and him getting an MVP. So I don't even think it matters anymore. It's just, the way sports have done this, the way that we've marketed ring culture and all this stuff, for years now, I think, it's really hurt leagues because none of us can get behind basically anything when it comes to regular season sports.
It's real dumb. And remember when we used to just like things?
No.
Right? Like, and I put it this way, like, there's, you know, I they're not for me, but, you know, people love these Marvel movies, right?
Uh-huh.
They're not winning Oscars.
No.
We don't say, yeah, but do it at the Oscars. Like, that. Like, you just enjoy it because you enjoy it. We sports are the thing we're supposed to do the most with that,
mm-hmm.
and we don't.
No, that man, I grew up a Seattle Supersonics fan, and I look back on those teams still, like, anytime I see, you know, the Sean Kemp dunk compilations come through every once in a while, right? Like, that was actually nice when Ant had his, like, incredible dunk this season, and people started to do, is he the best in-game dunker thing, and then all these old clips start coming out, and, you know, I was like, yes, good, Sean Kemp times. Those guys didn't win a damn thing. They made it to one finals, and they actually kind of got embarrassed. Like, they won some games on the Bulls. That was nice, but, like, their coach didn't even decide to put their best defensive player on MJ till game five, and, like, it's a different time. It's a different time. But I look back on those things like, that was the greatest team ever. Like, that's the greatest memories that I ever had, and it was all just regular season success. And it's crazy to see how quickly it's departed from that, where I do wonder if, you know, a kid who watches a champion or a team that doesn't win championships will look back as fondly, or whether or not it's just going to be, oh, well, they never won anything, and that's going to be the main point of conversation. Like, what is the next group, what is the next age group going to say about their teams that didn't win? I don't think it'll be the same. I really don't.
I don't either. And it's very frustrating. It makes me feel very old.
I know. That made me feel sad. Well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on. Kind of depressed you. Yeah, I was like, hey, sorry about, you know, your ownership situation and the sport we love turning into this. And yeah, go about your day now. Thanks, Zach.
It's going to be a great weekend.
Cheers, buddy. Always appreciate it.
Thanks,
Zach Harper, NBA writer for The Athletic, host of the Count the Dings podcast. Great guy overall. Okay. Yeah, God, this is a lot of old man stuff today. This is the old manning it.
But remember at the beginning of the year how excited me and you were for the rookie of the year race? Like, it was legit. Chet versus Wemby.
I never cared once. I genuinely thought it would be Wemby by a country mile all along. I never wavered from that. Day one, I said this will be the rookie of the year. And day two, I said that. And day three, and then even when they played each other and Spurs got waxed, I didn't care. I didn't never wavered. Rookie of the year should not be have anything to do with team success. And that was the only, once people started to do that for Chet, I went, oh, this is over. This is really over. The only way that that can ever kind of count is a year like when Barnes won and it was very, very thin or very, very tight across the board with all of the rookies. And so then you go, okay, well, fine. Then we can add all kinds of factors. It's the same way that I'm looking at it with, the NHL stuff this year for the Hart is everything is on the table. Normally, like the whole, hey, well, what does the next point getter on the team have? I don't really care. I should know who the MVP is. And this year I'm like, nope, add it all. Give us every single layer because we need every single little piece of information to properly make this decision. Anyway, great stuff from Zach. But yeah, I think basically where I'm at with this is a couple things. One is I think that the NBA, this is now becoming the hard conclusive proof of how difficult a time they're going to have marketing the game moving forward. That right now the most exciting guys are at the top of the Western Conference, and yet all we're talking about is the guys that are in the play-in. Still, LeBron, KD, Steph. Why? There should be more on Edwards. Like, why wasn't there just a epic amount of hype from basketball fans about Denver and Minnesota playing each other for the first overall seed? It wasn't. It was basically like I found out tuning in that night. I went, wait, that game's on tonight? Guess what? I guarantee you I would have known. Warriors versus Lakers. Suns versus Lakers. That would have become very, very apparent. And yeah, these guys are in mid-market teams, but the whole thing about the NBA was supposed to be, oh, it doesn't matter where you play anymore. Okay, well, kind of seems like it does. And everybody loves Anthony Edwards, but I think they like him more because of the YouTube highlights than the actual watching of games. The new fans of the game feel like that's the way it is. And Jokic just had this coronation, I thought of. Oh, wow. This is somebody that we should watch. This is an all-time player. Like, there is a reason that he's going to get three MVPs, and it's not just because of the company that he keeps. This isn't some like dry era for basketball players. This guy is one of the greatest players to ever play. If he puts together another championship this year, he puts together two rings, you're going to be having discussions about whether or not this guy's a top 10 player of all time. Like, he can enter that category. You've got Luka Doncic and this Mavericks team finally figuring it out. Like, there's great stories. It's the Boston Celtics, one of the NBA's most marketable teams, is having an unbelievable year where it feels like they are the kings of the Eastern Conference. And yet, it doesn't feel like there's as much juice as there should be. There's still a lot of conversation about, is Jason Tatum the MVP? Like, what? Okay, so that's the only way we can frame the discussions is whether or not he's the best player in the NBA. Like, why does that have to be the thing?
I think with Boston, too, is they've done the kind of the same thing of getting to the same point and then plateauing year after year. So now it's boring. It's like, do it. Let me see you do it. Let me see you win.
Yeah, but that should make them even more compelling. And also, like, Jason Tatum went to an NBA Finals as a 23-year-old kid. Like, I think it was pretty understandable. Like, they've made it to a Finals. Like, do it is kind of hilarious. It's not like they're the Leafs with first-round exits. Like, they've made deep playoff runs with this team and that they are very different this year. I think Zach hit on something there, that the league is having a tough time marketing itself and that they're in a very, very weird place where you would think it's very exciting that they have Jokic. And it's always like what he isn't rather than what he is. Very weird. And yeah, I don't care about the Lakers. I don't care about the Warriors anymore. I'm like, I don't care about the Suns because I watched the regular season and I know that they're flawed and I know that they're not going to be competitive. And yet they still dominate the discourse. Anyways, let's take a quick break and come back and close with our final what we missed. Subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, do all those kind things. And then, final what we missed a week.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So I don't usually like to talk about the Masters on Thursday and Friday just because things are happening, right? It has no shelf life. But Bryson yesterday. Whew. That was quite the statement for old Bryson. 7 under? Guy comes out day one and just rips it. Hits a 67. Or sorry, shot a 65. But this is a guy who called the course a 67. That's what it was. Who made the big proclamation. I think it was in 2020. Where he was like, yeah, the course of par 67 for me. And it's no problem. Conditions, I'm fine. I'm going to shorten up this course. I'm going to break the course. And we're like, whoa. And then he embarrassed himself. And now we know that a big part of DeChambeau is what, not is he a front runner or can he do it from the front? Can he do it when things start to crumble? So that'll be fascinating for this. But man, what a, I didn't even really consider what a legacy shifter this could be if he actually won this one. If he was actually in the hunt on the final day and he's sitting right there with an opportunity to actually try and break Augusta, like, well, that's a, it's a pretty fascinating thing to watch. So yeah, to me, that has now become quite easily far and away, especially since, you know, Jordan Spieth is out. I think I saw he was 6 over this morning. I was like, yeah, thanks for that, Jordan. Sorry to Joe House for thinking that that was going to be a thing, but, yeah. That's done. Anyways, what's up, Armin? What did we miss?
Do you have going to Augusta on your bucket list?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because I heard Ben the other day. He's been there.
Yeah, he has.
That's sick.
Wow, you listen to Ben's show? Nice.
Yeah.
It's nice to know he has a listener.
How do you get in there? Do you have to buy a ticket?
You got to enter a lottery.
Ah.
Yeah, to get a ticket. And then you can obviously buy them off secondary ticket market like anybody else. But no, to get the, you enter a draw. Okay, what's next?
Okay, so you and Zach touched on the drama in the sale of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Uh-huh.
Glenn Taylor's obviously having some buyer's remorse there. What did you regret selling? Something you loved, you could have definitely got more for, or it doesn't even matter about how much you sold it for, you just regret selling it?
Nothing, because I've never owned anything of value, so...
Really? Like, no, for me, it was my PS1 and my PS2. Like, I sold them for, like, $20 when I was, like, 14.
Okay.
Yeah, so I regret that every day of my life.
I remember once I tried to go to a pawn shop with a watch that my uncle gave me, and my uncle has money, and I thought that he bought me a nice watch, and then the watch was worthless, and I was like, oh, that's tough. I was embarrassed in a pawn shop. So I was like, I didn't want to sell this because I was dead broke, but then I also found out that my uncle literally didn't give a crap about me and that he bought me, like, literally a $50 watch, despite being, like, a multimillionaire. Me being like, oh, damn, this sucks. This is embarrassing. Also, it was a real lesson in me not having any idea of what fine goods were at the time. So, no, I don't have anything that I can remember off the top of my head that I regret selling. What's next?
He was pulling the Ocho Cinco just when you're a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people think it's real. I got a little trivia for you quickly.
Okay.
I know it's been 2 days straight, but Jokic and McKinnon are on track to become the first pair of basketball and hockey players from the NBA and NHL to both win the MVP from the same city, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't happened since the 1980s. I'm not going to tell you the exact year because that will make it too easy.
That already made it too easy.
Yeah, you got it? What's
the
other
100%.
Duo?
Oh, I can promise. First of all, I was genuinely nervous when you started asking this because I hate trivia. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, as if Armin's bringing this on me. But if it's the 1980s, then it's Gretzky and Magic.
Yeah. That's correct. 88,
for sure.
89 season.
Yeah. No, yeah. I go through the 1980s, who won the MVPs. It's like Bird, Magic.
Gretzky.
I think Gretzky, yeah. But it's because he's with the Kings right at the tail end of the 80s. Because people think about him as a 90s King. So maybe that's the only tricky part of the trivia, but no. Yeah.
I shouldn't have even given you the 80s.
I was going to say, it's the most easy decade to know the MVPs from in both those sports. And so, yeah, hey, guess what? Thanks for making me look smart.
I got you.
I was kind of trying to drag it up for a second so that other people could guess. But yeah, that was a pretty easy. Giving me the year was a hint you should have given me after I was sweating and going like, yeah, like I'm terrible with trivia. Terrible with trivia.
That was a pretty cool
Mike. I saw Mike put in the email. He's like, as each host trivia, he's like, guys, I could do a sports trivia with you guys on. I was like, this is never going to happen.
It would have to be post 2005.
Not only that, it would never happen.
like listening to a podcast of two guys not know things about sports is got to be the worst idea that I've ever been pitched on this show. Anyway, what's next?
There's a big debate on X about, do you make big purchases on your phone? That simple.
What do you mean?
Do you buy your airplane ticket on your phone? Do you buy a MacBook on your phone?
Why wouldn't I? What do I use?
People were like, no, I can't make any major purchase in my life on my phone. I have to open up
a web browser. Oh, so they're saying, okay.
I never thought about that, but I only do big purchases on my computer. I'm scared to use my phone for that.
Huh.
To make a mistake.
But for plane tickets, I actually use like an app.
Me too.
So like that, all that actually tells me if you won't book a flight using your phone is that you're not on a point system, which who's doing that in 2024? Who's not booking through points? What kind of life of luxury are you living?
Unless you're getting your points through your CC, your credit card.
But I do get my points through my credit card. And I have the app for it. Mm. Shout out Avion, in which I use. And I've, you know, I am booked for trips this summer thanks to Avion. So, no, I definitely do major purchases over my phone. I will say that when I'm buying clothes online, I prefer to use a web browser, but I think that's more practical just because you're looking at like the dimensions of the clothes and it's just a cleaner, easier way to look at it. But it has nothing to do with what you're saying, which is like a fear of
paranoia,
screwing something up. No, I love my phone. Okay. Me and my phone are thick as thieves. I trust you, sweet phone baby. Like I told you, I left my phone in the back of an Uber a couple weeks ago and
you're in shambles.
I was crushed. I was devastated. How could I do this to something that I love so deeply, so purely? I don't love anybody like I love my phone. Like, if the question was never see you guys again or lose my phone for a week, it would be an obvious choice for phone. Obvious. I like my phone way more than I like most of my friends. So, yeah, no. I love my phone. I trust my phone. I'll do anything on my phone. Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. I accept that my phone and I have a toxic relationship that I have to sometimes do things like put the timers up on Instagram and how I have to put the mute immediately on a lot of my tweets to make sure I don't stay in those wormholes and I can stay focused with stuff. But in terms of like, all I really want to be doing is hanging out with my phone.
Dude, forget the IG notification.
Why?
Like you've brought it up a few times. I know it's not stopping you from going on. Like why
stops
do you keep
me all the time?
You won't go on for the rest of the day?
No, but it shuts it down immediately. And then I never, like, I basically stay off of it for the rest of the day. No, it works, like, so well. Dude, being told you're on Instagram for an hour a day, whenever I hit that, it's the most embarrassing feeling immediately on planet Earth. You're like, wait, I had this open for an hour? Like, how is that even possible?
Like 1:30?
I sent my friends three memes. Yeah, if it happens to be during the day. Well, that is when I have my most downtime, too, right, is during the middle of the day, like, after the show. So sometimes that is the worst, but No. That absolutely works. And muting tweets is the number one thing. Muting the tweets is the best. Like, that has totally kept me off of social media. But my phone? Oh.
Do you cover your camera?
No.
Are you that paranoid?
No. I'm not at all paranoid. Dude, what? You're like a added weirdo. Like, afraid of...
Have I ever said anything that you like?
Yeah, you like stand-up comedy.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so you
that's
said
kept you guys
stuff.
Together.
Yeah, you said a lot that's of stuff I like, it. Actually.
That's
but
holding
yeah,
a lot of weight.
Anyway, subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars, and we'll see you next week.